Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. Joseph Cooper recovering from his back injury, and he is doing much better. I'm really happy to report that. Well, with the dog days of summer upon us, many of us spend our free time outdoors. And how many of us love that golden tan that comes from being outdoors? But living in South Florida, for all of its advantages, comes with the dangers of overexposure to the sun, and not only during the summer months. Joining us to get some important tips on sun scents for us and our children is pediatric dermatologist Dr. Anna Duarte. She's the Division Director of Dermatology for Miami Children's Hospital and founder and president of the Children's Skin Center, PA. And welcome, Dr. Duarte. Thanks for your time.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. So are we all vulnerable to the dangers of sun exposure, children, adults, dark-skinned, light-skinned, all ethnicities, all ages?
Absolutely. We're all vulnerable, and we all need to protect for that reason.
But it is true that some populations are more at risk.
Well, the whiter you are, the lighter or the fairer your skin, you're definitely at a higher risk. However, sometimes in more olive-complected individuals, a little bit more tan, naturally tan individuals, you can overlook signs of skin cancer because you are under the misperception that you're overprotected. So sometimes skin cancers can be more advanced in those populations. Mm. And we're finding that there's going to be or developing an epidemic in the Hispanic population and the darker-toned individuals because of that reason.
Is that because they think they're immune and therefore don't get checked?
Or they overlook small lesions that aren't healing, are bleeding, are growing, aren't going away, and they discount them. They come up with explanations other than a potential skin cancer.
Mm. Well, we're going to get to all those signs, symptoms, and all that. But at what age should parents begin taking precautions against sun exposure for their children?
I would have to say from birth.
From birth. Well, you know, so often you see, I mean, I see it all the time. I live on the beach and you see young children frolicking in the beach and building their sandcastles and playing. Is that a bad thing?
That's all great. It's fantastic. Just do it in a sun smart way. So you're going to wear some protective clothing, your sunscreen, maybe protective eyewear, some sunglasses with ultraviolet protection. You use your sunscreen as well.
But what about babies? Can they use sunscreen?
Well, it's recommended in general that under 6 months of age, you use other sun protective measures other than sunscreen. It's not you can't use a sunscreen lotion, a cream, or a spray in a baby. You can, but it's generally not recommended. So those babies, you want to avoid the peak sun hours, and you want to protect them with sun protective clothing and keep them in a shaded area unless they're in the water, and then retreat to the shade.
And the peak sun hours are?
It's generally thought between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Okay.
But sometimes at 3 o'clock, you can still get a sunburn.
Yeah. And on a cloudy day, you can get a sunburn.
Absolutely.
How does that work?
Well, the ultraviolet rays can penetrate through the clouds.
So are we just as vulnerable on a cloudy day as we are on a sunny day?
Sometimes more so, because people believe that it's not sunny, so they don't use sun protective measures and end up with a sunburn.
So it occurred to me, you're a pediatric dermatologist. I would think there wouldn't be too many young children with dermatological problems caused by sun, other than maybe allergies or rashes. Am I incorrect?
Well, my office is really, really busy.
Okay.
So kids do have a lot of rashes and things like that. Fortunately, I don't see a lot of sunburns because people are taking good precautions with their kids. So I don't see a lot of blistering sunburns. We don't see a lot of skin cancer in children, but it does occur.
It does?
It does occur. Melanoma does occur in children.
How?
Well,
do we know the reasons? I mean, is it genetic?
Genetic, mostly. You could be born with a mole.
Okay, yeah.
A congenital mole that develops a melanoma. Sometimes, because you're not thinking melanoma in that age group, a small wart like lesion would be considered a wart instead of a possible melanoma, and it goes undiagnosed for a period of time because of that. You're not thinking along those lines. So it does happen. You have to have a keen eye and an index of suspicion so that you take that little biopsy as a dermatologist and make the diagnosis.
So no matter what you see, you should check it out.
If you think it's a wart and it's not responding to treatment, definitely take a biopsy. And I think most dermatologists would, and most pediatricians would refer the patient. But if you're a parent and you've, you know, gone over the counter with little wart treatments mm-hmm. and things aren't healing, you know, you should get your child to the doctor and get checked.
You know, we've learned so much in the last decades about the risks of sun exposure and sunscreens, and we've become so much conscious of it. But you would think that would mean there would be less incidence of skin cancer, but that's not the case, is it?
I think it's just snowballed. And, you know, when I was a child, there really was not a lot of information out there about the risk of sun exposure. And it has just gotten progressively, logarithmically worse over the decades. So we're in a skin cancer epidemic. And I think hopefully with the next generation, we're going to start changing the statistics and reducing the rates. But right now, they're still on the rise.
That is, why do you think that is? Do you think the sun has gotten hotter? Do you have an opinion on that? I mean, the ozone layer disappearing. Do you have any?
I would imagine there is some compromise of the ozone layer, and it may lead to some increased ultraviolet radiation reaching the earth. But I just think in general, we've only now started to strongly campaign against blistering sunburns, excessive sun exposure, and getting these sun protective habits instilled in our children is key to changing the future statistics.
Right. So changing the culture entirely.
Changing the culture, changing the habits, absolutely.
It's so hard in a place like South Florida.
You can still enjoy the sun in a sun smart way, absolutely.
How common is skin cancer among all ages? I mean, does it mostly afflict the elderly, like after 50 or after 55?
Well, 1 in every 5 Americans will be diagnosed with a form of skin cancer during the course of their lifetime. That's the statistic, and that's pretty scary. Right now, between ages, I have it right here, between ages 15 and 29, melanoma is the second most common form of cancer. That's pretty
15 and 29?
Yes.
That's very young.
Right. And if you look at 25 to 29, melanoma is the most common cancer. So it can occur early. And that is a deadly form of skin cancer.
Do we know for certain that it's caused by sun?
There are genetic predispositions.
Right.
Absolutely. But a blistering sunburn, as was mentioned in the introduction to the program, can double your risk of skin cancer. Just one. And it accumulates. So throughout life. So that's why we're seeing everything we're seeing now with these numbers.
Mm. What are the most common types of skin cancer? Is melanoma the most, that's the deadly one?
Yes, but fortunately it's the more rare form.
Okay.
The most common is the basal cell carcinoma. So if you have a pearly bump on your skin that isn't healing or it's getting bigger or even bleeds, it should be checked out. So a basal cell carcinoma is a pearly lesion. Squamous cell carcinoma is more scaling. So if you have a blemish or you think it's a little eczema that isn't healing and may bleed or feel a little keratotic or rough, should get that checked out. Could be a squamous cell carcinoma. And all of these with early detection, the prognosis is extremely good. With basal cell and squamous cell, the risk of metastasis is extremely rare. Melanoma has a higher risk of metastasis. So that's the one that's really important to have early detection.
So let's talk about the treatment the treatment for it. So if you do have one of these and you catch it early enough, is that the key?
That's key.
Okay. And let's say you notice, as you said about the basal cell carcinoma, a little pearly thing, and you go to your doctor, and what's the procedure?
Well, most of the time, the dermatologist will take a little biopsy and then confirm. There's different types of basal cell carcinoma. So depending on the type, the treatment might be different. There's a lot of different treatments to offer. Sometimes you can just scrape them. there's a procedure called Mohs micrographic surgery, where it's done under a microscope for especially areas like the nose or the eyelid, around the lips, where you don't have a lot of extra skin and you want to conserve skin and take off only as much as you need. So Mohs is an option.
Is that where they keep doing it and analyzing it while you're under, and then they keep going deeper if they need to, and they stop when...
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So that's Mohs. And then there are topical treatments that can be used, different medications, like chemotherapy, so to speak, but it's topical. There's a procedure where you can use aminolevulinic acid in combination with light. We call it ALA Blue U, to also help heal. There's radiation. There's all sorts of treatments that we can use. But in most cases, a very simple minor surgery can take care of the problem if it's caught early.
And that's it. And then you don't have to worry.
For the squamous cell and the basal cell, absolutely. With melanoma, again, early, again, a simple surgery. If you have a mole that's changing in shape, color, border, evolving in any way, it should be checked out, because that would be a melanoma. And melanoma isn't always a pigmented lesion. It can also be any lesion that's changing. So anything that's not healing, that's been there, or that cropped up recently, should be checked.
We're speaking with Dr. Ana Duarte. She's a pediatric dermatologist, division director of dermatology for Miami Children's Hospital, and founder and president of the Children's Skin Center. And if you have questions about sun protection for you, your children, your parents, whatever, the do's and don'ts, please call us 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. You can email radio@WLRN.org. And we're going to take a short break on today's program. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Dr. Ana Duarte. She's a pediatric dermatologist and division director of dermatology for Miami Children's Hospital, and founder and president of the Children's Skin Center. But we're talking about sun protection and prevention of overexposure to the sun for adults and children. One thing I wanted to get back to, Dr. Duarte, was when we talk about early detection, what time period? I mean, how often are we supposed to see a dermatologist? Let me start there.
Okay, so I think that once a year is a good rule of thumb, but you should self-examine every month, head to toe. Take a mirror for those hard-to-reach areas.
Yeah, like the back. How do you...
Yeah, or have your spouse or friend help you out. Become very familiar with your own body and your own moles. And definitely don't wait a year if you notice a change. If the mole is itchy, if it's bleeding, if it hurts, any symptom, get it checked. Or if there was a bump there that wasn't there,
God, you have to really do some careful self-examination.
You do, and you have to check your scalp. So when you're at the hairdresser, take advantage, because they're parting it and blow drying it. If they see anything, to bring it to your attention. It's tough, but at least once a year. If you've had a history of melanoma or skin cancer, though, personally or in your family, more frequently.
How often?
It's going to depend on the dermatologist. I would seek their advice depending on the specifics of the history, but it could be every 3 months. It could be a couple times a year.
What about other healthcare professionals like family doctors or primary care physicians? Are they trained to spot suspicious areas on their patients when they're doing a general exam?
I think absolutely. They can do a great screening. And if they pick something up that's worrisome, they usually will refer to a dermatologist. So, you know, I think also, for instance, my GYN will do a skin check and refer if need be. Absolutely.
You know, I want to talk about sunscreens, because there's a little controversy surrounding them. I showed you a paper earlier, but I'd heard, you know, I mean, that was very extreme opinion, but how are we supposed to use them every day, and what SPF, and how often do we reapply them, and what is the going...
Recommendation,
thank you.
Well... Yes, we should apply them every day. It should become part of our routine on a daily basis.
All over.
Well, Not if, you know, clothed areas, but exposed areas.
Right, right.
So exposed areas, yes. It's recommended that the sunscreen be broad spectrum. And that's clearly seen on the label. Broad spectrum means against ultraviolet A and ultraviolet B. There should be an SPF of at least 30 or greater, and it should be water resistant. Now, if you're out in the sun and you're in the water, if you're sweating, it's recommended that it be reapplied after sweating and towel drying, and also every 2 hours in addition to that.
So you have to
work it. To get the appropriate coverage, you have to cover all exposed areas, and you also have to apply the correct amount. So it's thought that if you cup your hand and you fill it, that's pretty much how much you need to cover all the exposed areas.
And we're talking about our ears and everything?
Yes, yes, because if you miss a spot, you may get a burn there. So it has to be, yeah, all the little hidden areas, your neck, behind your ears. The sun is so strong.
So this paper I showed you, this is the work of a PhD scientist in California who says that sunscreens themselves can be life-threatening for the carcinogenic and endocrine-disrupting chemicals contained in them. What are your thoughts about that? I've heard that also, that actually they themselves have really some toxic substances in them.
I think we have to go back to the FDA, and the FDA has ruled that these substances, these chemicals, are safe and effective to use in sun protection. That's what we're currently told, and I do believe we can use these products that are available on the shelf at our drugstores, use them safely and effectively without further concern. There's really, I don't see any real evidence to substantiate that. Although I know that there's that school of thought out there, and I respect it, but right now I'm going by the FDA.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have, excuse me, Ray in Miami. Hi, Ray. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Bonnie. And Dr. Duarte, I've been living in Miami since 1938, and that's the days, B.C., before computers. As a high school student in the summer, all you did was lay on a beach all day long. So I know a lot better now, and I have had basal cell and squamous, thank goodness. Never had the big M, but lost a very close and dear friend to melanoma. I'm very careful. I walk every morning for 40 minutes and clothed head to toe, very long pants, long sleeves, etc. My question is, I've hunted for so-called, I think they call it SUV, and not the car, but the clothes that are UV protected, and I go every 6 months to, and have been, to dermatologists, and I don't understand, there'll be like long sleeve shirts that are rated UV protected, but yet when you hold it up to the light, you can see right through it, and I can't understand how it can protect you from the rays of the sun if you can see through it.
Yeah, I understand your question. I would have to trust the vendor on that, and the regulations that allow them to use that labeling. Have you found the clothing to be effective, or are you getting sun through it?
No, I haven't bought that.
Oh,
club. Actually, I walk with an umbrella.
Okay.
And because I'm not too happy about the what Bonnie just mentioned about the SPF rating, I don't have a hell of a lot confidence in FDA, that I know they do the best they can, but they've approved Lipitor, etc., and you know, drugs that were found later to be detrimental to one's health. So in that case, I would like to buy a shirt, but it doesn't make sense to me. If you can see through it, how can it protect you from UVA, UV, yeah, and B?
I have to believe that the weave is tight enough to do that. I can't, you know, speak for every vendor, but, you know, labeling is controlled in this country, so they must have gone through the testing to allow for that rating to be put on their label. So I think you may just have to to buy it and try it out and see how it works for you.
Well, the only thing is, if it doesn't work, that means the skin cancer.
Well, I would go back and, you know, try again. I think, you know, I don't think you'll get one sunburn from trying it. I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay, Ray, thank you for calling.
Bye.
And Ileana in Boca, about what we just talked about, actually. Ileana, welcome to Topical Currents.
Thank you. My question?
Yes.
Hi. My question is, how do you feel about the active ingredient, avobenzone, benzophenone, and the difference between those and the physical zinc oxide and titanium in the sunscreen? And which one will be your personal favorite?
Okay, so I use both, actually. Again, I feel that the FDA labeling as safe and effective, I feel comfortable with that. And I use sunscreen without concern. I think you can go with your individual preference with titanium dioxide or zinc oxide. I think those are fantastic physical blocks as well. So I like the fact that people can have a choice to see what it is that suits them the best. But I really do rely that the FDA has not come up with concerns regarding the chemical sunscreens.
Okay, Ileana?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let me give the number again. If you have a question for Dr. Anna Duarte, she's a pediatric dermatologist, but I guess before you specialized in pediatrics, you were a...
adult.
Normal. Adult dermatologist. Okay. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576 or radio at WLRN.org. Pam wants to know, what is the protective effect of tinted car windows? Do you still need to use sunblock when driving?
Well, it depends on the type of shield that you're getting with the car windows. I'm not sure if they're protecting against ultraviolet A and ultraviolet B. You should be okay. However, in and out of the car and back and forth, you know, you still need to use some form of sun protection on your skin. So I don't know exactly what they're putting in the shield.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is ultraviolet A and ultraviolet B, that's actually good.
Yeah, I was thinking for drivers, bus drivers, taxi drivers, mm-hmm. whatever. What if they spend, you know, except for a few minutes to go here or there, do they still need to wear?
Right, but the ultraviolet rays do get through regular glass.
They do.
Yes. So unless you have some kind of polarized glass, you still need to protect.
Okay, Patty in Coconut Creek has a question. Hi, Patty. Welcome.
Hi, doctor. I wanted to know if there's a new or different treatment than Effudex for the face if you've had repeated skin cancers. That Effudex it's like an acid on the face, and it just looks so awful for so long.
Yeah, Effudex is tried and true, and it's really a good treatment. It's an aggressive treatment. There are some forms of Effudex-like products. I don't know if you're familiar with Carac or Solarays. They're a little easier on the skin. You can ask your dermatologist about those.
What was the first one you said?
Carac with a C, and okay. Solarays with an S.
Okay.
You can also talk to your dermatologist about using ALA Blue U, which is something that they would do in the office.
Mm-hmm.
To treat the AKs. It can also be pretty strong, like Effudex. But I think it's a little better tolerated in general. However, some people can have pretty good reactions. Strong is good. If you're getting a strong reaction from Effudex, it's probably because you have a lot of sun damage that the Effudex is addressing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some options for you.
Okay, Patty?
Okay, as a little follow-up question there, is there any home remedy for those little keratosis spots, just that rough skin that you get from time to time on an arm or leg or something? It seems to be areas that get rubbed.
I don't know about specifically a home remedy, but a good moisturizer, a cream-based moisturizer, so not a lotion. Mm-hmm. And you might try a little over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream mixed in with that and see if that takes care of it. It sounds like you're describing more like eczema.
No, these are just individual spots. They almost look gray. It's just rough skin.
Yeah.
So then you would need something that exfoliates a little bit, something over-the-counter, maybe a moisturizer with a little salicylic acid or a little lactic acid, and see if that helps you.
Okay.
Thanks, Penny.
You're welcome.
We're speaking to Dr. Ana Duarte. She's a pediatric dermatologist, division director of dermatology for Miami Children's Hospital. And we're going to get to children when we come back on Topical Currents after this break. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Dr. Ana Duarte, a pediatric dermatologist and division director of dermatology for Miami Children's Hospital. And we're going to move on a little bit to children now. So what are the important steps and measures parents and teachers can take? Do they have formal policies regarding sunscreens and protective gear in schools?
I think that's a really great topic that you raise. It turns out that a lot of schools don't allow sunscreens to be used.
Don't allow.
So you have to check with your school administrator to see what the school policy is. And then once you find that out, if they don't allow them, with a doctor's note, the school nurse can apply in some schools apply the sunscreen to your child before physical education or a field trip, Things like that. So it's really important to get the school policy. And that's one of the reasons that I partnered with Coppertone, making the sunscreen grade program.
What is the making the sunscreen grade program?
It's raising an awareness of the importance of sun protection year round. So not just in the summer, but also during the school year for children, and raising awareness to parents of the importance of setting an example by role modeling the behavior of applying sunscreen so the children pick that up as part of their normal behavior. So that's really the thrust of the program. And again, most important as well is the school situation, to find out what the policies are and see how you can adequately protect your child during the school day if they don't allow sunscreen.
Why don't they allow sunscreens?
I don't know exactly why. I do know that some states now have laws that allow children to take sunscreen mm-hmm. with them to school, but there is some FDA labeling where children shouldn't handle sunscreen. So it is a little tricky.
What about sunglasses, hats, protective clothing? Are they allowed sunglasses?
So you have to find out what the policy is. You would think the schools want to cooperate and want to protect the children as much as possible. Even with sun protective shade structures, where the kids can avail themselves when they're not out running around in the field. So the most important thing is to have the conversation with the school administrators, bring it up at the PTA meetings. So if they don't have a policy in place, that a policy is put in place for sun protection for the kids.
Okay. Paul says that he uses UV shirts kayaking and they work great as protection against sunburn. I'll be out for 3 to 6 hours at a time. Have compared myself to people using sunscreen, having great results.
I think that's great. I'm all for it. I think sunscreen use is part of sun protection. I think if you wear a wide brim hat, UV protective sunglasses, UV protective clothing, that's fantastic. And then the exposed areas, that's where you apply your sunscreen lotions.
Let's talk to when we do get a sunburn, Adrian in Miami. Hi, Adrian.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I have, my girlfriend has a 10-year-old son, and he is prone to getting sunburns, even though we do apply lotion. Just wondering if there's anything after the fact that should be applied that would be a best use practice.
Well, first I would reevaluate how the sunscreen is being applied if he's getting a burn, because you need to remember to apply it 30 minutes before you go out and then every 2 hours, and right after swimming, sweating, or towel drying. So I think there may be something there that's missing. Make sure your sunscreen is UVA and UVB protective, SPF 30, and water resistant. So first check on that. Then take other measures to protect the child, like we just talked about, with a protective hat, sunglasses, and protective clothing. If you're still getting a sunburn, you need to see your dermatologist to see why he's so sensitive. If you do get a sunburn, a little topical hydrocortisone cream or a little calamine to soothe, some aloe vera to soothe. If it's just pink, if the child isn't feeling well, lightheaded, you may want to see your doctor to see that the child's not dehydrated or has any kind of toxicity from excessive sun exposure. So it could become very serious. If you have blistering, you may even have to go to an emergency room. So it depends on how severe it is, whether you can manage it with just basic outpatient first aid versus having to seek medical help.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Anything else, Adrian?
Yeah, just a quick question. I've used milk of magnesia before for sunburns, and it works great. Is there any reason for that? Or
I think it's just probably soothing.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and what about non-blistering sunburns? Alana, Coral Gables, hi.
Hi, so I had a question. You mentioned earlier that blistering sunburns increase your risk for skin cancers, but I've never had a blistering sunburn, but I've had sunburns where it's just red and then the next day it's a little bit tanner. Is that also correlated with risk?
Yes, so a blistering sunburn will double your risk. However, any sunburn will increase your risk mm-hmm. to some extent. So yes, anytime you get any kind of burn, even a tan, is a sign that you have had some damage from the ultraviolet rays of the sun.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, and natural sunscreens, that would be good. Let's talk to Laura in Miami. Hi, Laura.
Hello, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Let me see if I have a way. I'm driving, sorry. Yes, I wanted to, you know, with all due respect, I think we need to approach this kind of a subject in a more holistic way, because I go to the doctor every 6 months because I'm very wise, but I'm also a natural practitioner, a certified one. And what I see every time that somebody, you know, send me an email or they read my blog post, they always ask about natural alternative. And every time that I go to the doctor and I have a conversation with him, it's always about the FDA, as your guest at the show. And it seems like they're reading a script and they're not giving us alternative about food, about what kind of supplements that we need to take. It's just about, and it seems like being a brand ambassador of different sunscreen lotions myself, I do try to teach the people who read my blog about the natural alternative as well. And, you know, people can choose whatever they want.
Well, Laura, what are some natural alternatives?
Well, there's a lot that you can take right now that you can buy right now on natural food stores. That their brands, that I cannot say one brand. It's Keep
okay.
The Sun. You know, they're alternative. That they don't have the chemicals that the regular ones they have. And even, you know, I know, I understand everything about UVA, blah, 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 but there's some studies related to melanoma and a lot of cancer, and if you go to the cancer patient, I don't remember the organization right now, but if you go there, they recommend their patients that they're doing chemotherapy not to use the chemical sunscreen.
Okay, let's let the doctor weigh in.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate where you're coming from. And I don't want to feel as though I'm reading any kind of script or you think that I don't. I think that I actually do recommend a lot of different sun protective measures, including the wide brim hat, the sunglasses, the protective clothing. And then we talked about with another caller regards using the titanium dioxide or the zinc oxide. That's certainly one option. I just think that if you're looking at the chemical sunscreens, to this point, they are considered safe and effective by the FDA. And that's all I'm saying. But I think the consumer can get all the information out there and make their choice whether they want to use those or they want to use the others. So it's an option for people.
Yes, I think that's why the consumer has now, you know, the knowledge and the power to change what the brands are doing with their brands, because even, you know, the sunscreen, that it, which is like a very, very profitable, I don't want to say, but one profitable business, now they're having like a natural brand so they can, people can choose whatever they want to choose. But I think doctors, because I'm not, I haven't been able to go with you because I don't have kids, but my doctors, it's like I said, listen, can I buy the natural one? Is it good as well? And they're like, no, you know, buy this one, which is chemical.
Well, I think that you have the right to choose, and definitely it's very important as well to avoid the peak sun hours. So go out early, go out later. So there's a lot of different ways we can protect our skin. I appreciate your point of
Thanks
view.
Thanks so much, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you.
We need to take one more break on today's Topical Currents. We'll come back, take your calls and more of your emails. Stay with us. There we are.
The sunshine.
Let the sunshine. Of course, from Aquarius. Yes, well, we have a lot of that here in South Florida. It is Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Dr. Anna Duarte, a pediatric dermatologist. We're talking about risks and prevention for sun exposure. We have a tweet. I think we went over this from Alex or from... whatever, Alexander. How many, there's so many options in different SPF types. What are the best ones? But you said it needs to be 30 or over.
30 or over. And don't be misled if you're using SPF 100. You still have to follow all the rules, which is apply 30 minutes before, every 2 hours after swimming, sweating, and towel drying. So again, that's consumer preference. You will get a little bit more protection using a slightly higher SPF. But you still have to reapply, and you still have to put the right amount on and cover all exposed skin.
So we have an emailer from Stephen who quotes the Environmental Working Group study. Have you seen those studies? I saw one. He says that no oxybenzone and other endocrine disrupting chemicals, which is what I read earlier, that they act, get in the bloodstream and act like estrogen and can trigger allergic reactions. And that there are high concentrations between that and health harms. There have been links between that. The other one is retinal palmitate, which it says it's supposed to have anti-aging effects, but on sun-exposed skin, it can speed development of skin tumors and lesions. Are you familiar with?
I'm not really familiar with the studies on the retinal palmitate. And the oxybenzone, again, you know, I'm sure in some individuals, they may have reactions, but I don't think it's across the board. So I think that each consumer has to, and there's such a wide variety of sunscreens to select from. If you want to avoid that chemical, you can avoid it. Again, I'm going by the studies that the FDA has published. To this day, it's deemed to be safe and effective.
Right. I guess a lot of people question the FDA findings, you know.
And that's okay. There's alternatives for those people. That's fine.
I was reading by the Environmental Working Group that U.S. standards for sunscreens are lagging far behind Europe, Canada, Japan, and Australia.
That I really can't speak to.
You can't speak
to. I'm not aware of that.
Well, let me ask you this, doctor. What about a healthy amount of sunshine for vitamin D3? Does the sunscreen decrease our production of vitamin D3?
There is some benefit from some sun exposure and vitamin D. That's true, because the skin will produce it naturally. But the position statement from the American Academy of Dermatology currently is that it is not recommending sun exposure for that purpose, so that you can get an adequate amount of vitamin D through your diet and through supplements. That's the current position.
Really?
Yes. So we're really advocating for sun protection when you're out there.
Always.
Always.
Always. Well, I wouldn't be a good advertisement for the American Dermatological Association. Let's talk to Kate in Miami, who has a question about sunscreens. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm from Australia, actually, and where we have big deficiencies in the ozone layer and big skin cancer problems.
We also have no hat, no play rule at schools, and children are frequently slathered with sunscreen on the way in. So I love sunscreen, and I can tell you on a recent trip back there that our sunscreens have a lot, if not all, of the chemicals that are contained in the ones that I found here in the U.S. My question, that's just my son that I'm trying to protect from the sun. My question is, with active ingredients in sunscreens, do you require more than one active ingredient to get good UVA and UVB protection? And the reason I ask is because I recently read somewhere that the FDA are currently revising their conditions for when sunscreens can be labeled broad spectrum. So I just wondered if you could comment on that.
I do believe you would need more than one chemical to provide the broad spectrum coverage, but I honestly can't speak to that in that detail. But I will commend Australia on really spearheading the effort for sun protection. They were way ahead of the United mm-hmm. States. We have caught up, I want to say, in our campaign for sun protection, but Australians were in a skin cancer epidemic well before us and really got a good head start in getting...
And it's on the decline there?
I don't know if it's on the decline yet, but they've definitely got the measures in place and gotten the information out to the public.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Kate. We have an emailer who wants to know about Tinea versicolor. And if it's serious, if left untreated, or is it just a cosmetic issue?
So it's a little yeast infection. It occurs in people that sweat a lot, so it's usually on the chest and back. I've never seen anything serious come of it, but I have seen people completely covered in it.
Oh.
And it is contagious, so it is a good idea to treat it. There are some over-the-counter treatments, a ketoconazole cream and shampoo. And if that's not enough, then you should see your dermatologist for some prescription strength medications.
Okay. And it's contagious, meaning it's transferred how?
Contact.
Okay. All right. Let's speak to Scott in Miami Beach. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Good afternoon, ladies.
Hi.
I've got, I guess it's from head to toe because I've got extra face, meaning I'm balding. So I do SPF each and every day. After I shave, I use a lotion that's got 15. So I put it on my head, my ear tops, the whole bit. Is that adequate, or do I need to add something else? That's the first part.
The current recommendation is an SPF of 30, at least. So I would say that it's not adequate.
Okay, in that case, I'll have to change my pattern then. Because okay. I use the lotion after I shave, then it's got SPF, and I figured that was adequate. And the second thing is, I love to wear flip-flops on the weekend, which I know that doctors don't like that because of potential infections or whatever, but the heels of my feet get so rough, cracked, and dry. What can I do to possibly alleviate some of that so I don't have ugly feet?
So, yeah, I think we're okay with flip-flops as far as doctors go. But, yes, something with a salicylic acid, a urea, a lactic acid to help thin that. You may find something over-the-counter, a cream. An ointment. If not, I'm sure your dermatologist can recommend something.
I've got my annual with a dermatologist next week, as a matter of fact. But I looked online and there was if you call it a recipe, it was Listerine, warm water, and what was the other item? It was three things you're supposed to soak your feet in this, and it was, oh, vinegar, that's what it was. White vinegar, Listerine, and warm water. You soak your feet and then scrub them. And supposedly it takes off the dead skin.
Well, you know, I mean, the acetic acid in the vinegar may be the exfoliating agent. You can give it a try.
Okay, thanks, Scott.
No. Thanks, ladies.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and let's talk to Barney in Boca. And we just have a couple of minutes left. Barney, hi, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I'll be real brief, and I will take my answer off the air. Would you be kind enough to discuss the changes in atmosphere which have led to this increase or this seeming increase in skin cancers? And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I think
we talked about that
already.
Yeah,
we talked about that a little bit. I'm not an expert in this area, but there's, you know, some thinning of the ozone. I think people are spending a lot of time outdoors. There's also the whole issue of the tanning bed. So that may be relating also to the increased number of skin cancers being seen. And also just, you know, we need to change behavior. We need to change the culture so that people are more more likely to incorporate sun protection as part of their daily routine.
Okay, well, thank you for calling. And let's see. What about anything more about, can parents actually change school policies? I mean, are there measures that they can take?
I think that parents definitely can advocate for their kids at school. In this Making the Sunscreen Great program on the coppertone.com website, you can go to the program and there you can download a letter to start the conversation with your administrator to find out what the policy is. And if there isn't a policy, through your PTA, start to work on a policy. Because especially I think in the Sunshine State, we should have our kids well protected at school. The American Academy of Dermatology also offers a shade structure grant program of up to $10,000 per structure for schools that would require a structure if they don't already have one. So that's also a way of protecting our kids. And as we mentioned before, the hats and sunglasses, can they wear them like they can in Australia?
Right.
So kids should be allowed to wear them. So you have to find out what the policies are with school administrators.
Okay. All right. Well, we want to thank you very much for being with us today. Dr. Anna Duarte is a pediatric dermatologist, division director of dermatology for Miami Children's Hospital, and founder and president of the Children's Skin Center, PA. And that website is childrensskincenter.com with no apostrophes. Okay. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
It was really fun. Thank you.
Thank you. And that does wrap up our program for today. We thank you for spending your time with us. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from our online producer, Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. And more information, links, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. That's facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Tomorrow's Topical Currents begins with literary contributor Ariel Gonzalez and his conversation with author and journalist Julia Cook. Her new book, The Other Side of Paradise, recounts her 10-month stay in Cuba in 2009. And more, Linda Gassenheimer gives us the scoop on Miami Spice, which runs through August and September. Bonnie Berman, hoping your day is a good one. Thanks so much for joining us today. Please stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.